Welcome to the Money Mastermind Show. Let's talk money.
And welcome to the Money Mastermind Show. Money can be the destroyer of relationships. When two people aren't on the same page financially, it causes a level of stress that many couples can't survive through. Tonight, we have Ty and Talit of His and Her Money to help us discuss how to talk to finances with your partner when you have different priorities financially. Welcome to our show.
Hey, we're happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you. And the members of our Money Mastermind show, as most people are aware, we have Kyle Prevo of youngandthrifty.ca, Miranda Marquit of Planting Money Seeds, Peter Anderson of Bible Money Matters, Tom Drake of the Canadian Finance Blog, and I'm Glenn Craig of Free From Broke. So let's just throw it out there. Why is it so hard for couples who otherwise are going to share every secret and desire and everything about themselves? Why is it so hard for them to all of a sudden talk when it comes to money?
Money is emotional, whether that emotion is positive or negative. And it's a tough conversation to have. I mean, we've even talked to a husband and wife who have a background in therapy, in family and relational therapy, and they have a tough time talking about money because money just evokes a different level of emotion. It can come from your upbringing, some of the things that you saw growing up in relation to money that may have left some scars or may have developed some habits that don't mix or mesh with your partner. And so therefore the topic of money, because of our various different styles, our various different upbringings, our various different backgrounds when it comes to money, makes it a tough topic to navigate, especially in the context of marriage.
So what is it about money, though, that gets so emotional about it? Like, why is it that we clam up when we start talking about that? I mean, we could talk about all sorts of other craziness. You know, you fall for that person. It's like you're talking until like 4 a.m. and all your hopes and desires. But all of a sudden, this comes up and we just done.
I mean, if you think about it, just think about the fact that money has a direct correlation with how you feel. Either you're stressed or you're at peace. And that can be completely tied to the balance in your checking and savings account. And because of that, because of how you feel when it comes to your money, even if you're not intentionally trying to feel a certain way in regards to money, you do. When bills come in and you don't have enough there, that you can't help that emotion. Or when the bill comes, it is no big deal. That peace that you feel is not something that you strive or seek out. It's something that happens. And so now, like in our case, naturally, I'm a spender and naturally she's a saver. And then we get married and now we look at money. We use money very differently. And so now when she's talking to me about money from her vantage point, it's as if she's speaking Chinese. Like, I don't know what you're saying. What do you mean savings account? What is a savings account? Why would I save the money? I'd rather go get a shirt. But it's just the language can be different. It can be like you're speaking a different language if you're not careful.
Right. And then, too, I think when it comes to especially talking about money with your spouse, I mean, you don't really want to be accountable. And money calls you to have to be accountable to your spouse, whether you're spending it the wrong way or spending it the right way, or whether you're saving it or you're not. I think sometimes, especially in marriage, we're like, wait a minute, you're not my mother. Mm-hmm. You're not my father. So I shouldn't have to explain to you what I'm going to do with my money. And because it calls us to be accountable. And I don't think that really a lot of relationships, I don't think that people like to be accountable mm-hmm. at all times.
That's interesting because, you know, is it that people don't want to put those restrictions on themselves?
Yep.
Because this sounds like something that's very similar to why a lot of people don't want to budget, right? We always hear how great it is to budget. It's so important to budget. You can easily control your finances with budgeting. But I think a lot of people just don't want to put a limitation. Like, look, if I want to spend $50 on movies, I'm going to spend it. You know, I don't want to have to live to the letter of some other law.
Absolutely.
It's bad enough making your own budget. Now you got someone else making your budget for you. That's talk about emotion on that. Yeah, certainly that can come into play, I think, especially when people are sort of just feeling out, living with each other or combining bank accounts for the first time.
Yeah, you know, you guys made a point too about how when you're getting together as a couple for the first time, you can really be coming at the whole thing from a different perspective. Money means different things to different people. For, you know, for the husband, it might mean freedom, or, you know, along those lines. For the wife, maybe it means security. You know, and when you're coming at it from different viewpoints to start with, a lot of times you're not even able to meet in the middle because you're not speaking the same language like you guys were saying.
Do you think some of the problem, though, is, okay, we're saying how maybe it's a different language, maybe we're on different pages, but that part of the problem is we wait a long time before we even start talking about it? You know, like, I imagine a lot of couples don't necessarily go into deep financial conversations early on. And then you think everything's fine, you get married, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's talk about this. Whoa, wait a minute. Who is this Jekyll and Hyde person we're talking about now?
Yeah, yep. I know, at least amongst – I think I can still call myself young safely, much to my students' chagrin maybe. I think amongst younger people, even younger professionals that have built up student debt, heard the phrase tossed around. I'm not sure who came up with it, so I'm copyright plagiarizing someone here, but the phrase sexually transmitted debt, the STD talk that you have to have with your partner. And it is super taboo amongst young people. I think it's easier for young people to be straight up with, like, different partner baggage that they have in their past than it is about their financial past. And it is a conversation I think a lot of people dread, and they're maybe only put a bit at ease by the fact that we're all sort of in debt, it seems, young professionals. And so, yeah, it's definitely an awkward sort of first date. It's not romantic. And so, like, when, at what point do you sort of break down that wall? I don't know what the best answer is, but I know that it does affect your compatibility.
Right. That was Madam Money. So who said the?
Nice. Thanks, Miranda. So we don't get sued here.
Yeah, I want to make sure we get that out there. That's Tara Jackson. That's Tara Jackson. That was super fun. Our financial STDs. So yes.
That is really great. But yeah, I think that conversation is definitely lacking in the premarital stage. Even if you do have the conversations, like for us, we had money talks, we had money conversations, but we didn't have transparent, like 100% transparent ones. Matter of fact, I hid the fact that I had so much debt from my soon to be wife out of fear. So again, everybody has brings different baggage when it comes to finances. And so for me, I had made a bunch of financial mistakes and I was trying to recover. And then I fell in love with somebody who was in the financial services industry, had a degree in finance, had no debt, had perfect credit.
Total opposite.
And that's who I fall in love with, right? So now how do I tell that person that I have tens of thousands of dollars of debt because of all the financial mistakes that I've made, right? Like, that's a tough conversation to have. She's going to run away if I tell her. At least right. That's what I thought in my mind. And so I tried to figure out a way to do it on my own and to try and fix it before the marriage, which was a complete failure. And we had to have that tough talk. And the problem is with most couples is they just ignore the topic. They just see that, oh, he pays for dinner all the time, so he must be doing all right. Right? We make a lot of assumptions. We don't have a lot of discussions. And so you get engaged, you get married, you go to the honeymoon, you come home, and here we go. Let the fun times begin, because now you get to see what's really real and what really isn't. And then a lot of times that's when the trouble starts, because of that lack of preparation ahead of time. I mean, it's not like you got to come to your first date with credit reports and credit scores, but there should be some little small discussions that happen here and there and just slowly build up. And then when you're at the point where you feel like this could be the one, then the conversation needs to get a little deeper.
Do you think it's like, when you talked about fear, it's like you're exposing maybe your self-worth and just all sorts of, like, confidence. I mean, you come in and you're confident about all these other things, and now it's like, wait a minute, but maybe here I'm imperfect. Maybe here I'm a little bit of a failure, and maybe you're afraid to share that.
Yeah, it wasn't a little bit. I felt like a complete failure. Complete and utter. Okay? And that drove me to silence. And that drives a lot of people to silence. Because when it comes to money, that you either feel like a failure or a hero. You do. You do. Because there's so much emotion invoked. And if you didn't come from the background of having been taught or trained in the area of personal finance, which is the testimony of most people, then you go out there and you try to figure things out on your own. And if you figure out things on your own by falling flat on your face, you do. You feel like a failure in that area. And that is not, you never, I don't care what it is that you feel like you failed at, you don't want to talk about it.
It's like a major measure of who we are, isn't it? I mean, money is always that big scorecard in the game. And we always hold it. I don't know if we hold it over each other, but we certainly use it as a measurement of who we are, right? You make more money, you're a better person somehow. So, I can see that when if you're in debt, then somehow maybe you're less of a person. It's like a crime almost. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if some couples – partners are more apt to talk about their prison sentences than their debt.
Yeah, that's a badge of honor.
Well, and you're going to find that out a little easier, I think, than about somebody's debt.
The debt doesn't leave tattoos on your arms, Glenn. Right. So really, that's the lead in there. But
yeah. But I mean, it's just a crazy thing, though, that there's that much of a fear and that much of a blockage in that conversation that, you know, we would talk about prison maybe before we would talk about student loan debt maybe. Mm-hmm. So I guess the big question is, I mean, how do we open up that conversation? How do we get people to start doing that? How do we make people understand that, you know what, it's kind of okay that we talk about these things? And
I think for us, it had to be, we just had to be honest and open with each other. And just our faith is strong, you know, in God. And we knew, hey, I'm either going to trust God or I'm not. And with Talit, you know, he was afraid to come to me and to talk to me about his finances out of fear. And you should have been afraid.
Nah.
You know, I was a rock star, you know, when it came to my finances and things like that. But actually, I did the opposite of what Talit thought that I was going to do. When I saw that he was being open and honest and being truthful, I was able then to receive him a lot better. I was like, okay, wow, like this is somebody that I can trust. And you know what? You're not a failure because of this and because of your past. We can work past this. But if you hold secrets from your spouse, I don't care if it's for good reasons or not, that's not a good thing. It's going to do nothing but chip away at the trust foundation. And trust is huge in a marriage. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to enter our marriage with lies. So we tell a lot of the couples that we consult with, we tell them, lay your cards on the table. You must be transparent, regardless of whatever might come out of it, how your spouse might perceive you or whatnot. You must be honest, and if not, do it for yourself.
Well, I think that, though, one of the things that you said was you were open to him, and you weren't mean to him. And I think that's important, too, because a lot of the time, we're inclined to judge.
Yep.
When somebody comes to you and says, hey, I made this huge money mistake, your first reaction is, how could you be such an idiot?
Right.
And really, when you're dealing with your significant other, you cannot be like that, especially if you want to promote a good relationship. You do have to be willing to kind of take that initial reaction down a notch and like you said, be open to them and be kind.
Yep.
You got to understand that marriage is a union of two imperfect people.
Right.
And if you come into it with that understanding, you're able to receive your spouse's imperfections because you understand that you have some of your own.
Yep.
Yeah, I wonder also. Go ahead, Peter.
To say, when you're coming into that marriage, you know, you're coming into the marriage as two selfish individual people that have their own wants and needs and desires. And, you know, in order for that marriage to work, you have to be able to create some sense of unity in that marriage. And, you know, I was listening to one of your podcasts with Kevin Millard of Marriage Works.
Mm-hmm.
And in that podcast, he was talking about how selfishness is just a huge problem in creating unity in marriage and in your finances. And, you know, do you think that really is one of the big things that's keeping people apart?
Oh, and
probably, being transparent? Probably number one. Because you're putting yourself on stage and putting your spouse down at the same time. Again, you're taking the viewpoint of this is your mess. You have these issues. You need to fix this. And you're not following the biblical mandate that says to remove the log out of your own eye first, right? And what happens is you spend so much time pointing the finger at your spouse that you don't realize that there's three pointing back at you that you need to address. And that is a huge divisive trait of many marriage, unfortunately, of many marriages. And that is, it's bigger than finance. Like, that's a fundamental core foundational issue. And so that's what Ty was saying. Like, it's so important to put all your cards on the table, because you got to lay the right foundation or everything you build has the potential to fall down. So yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard, but you're laying a solid foundation, and you're much more able to build a solid house if you do the hard work at the foundation level.
Do you think some part of it is, you know, I think ideally when you talk to somebody, it's like saying, oh, you know what, I've done this in the past. This is what I'm doing. This is where I'm trying to go. But do you think some part of it is maybe one partner is really just not willing to change their finances and they don't want to hear about it? So, you know what, I know I spend a lot. I know I put a lot on my credit card. I don't want to be told, you know, I'm not willing to make that change yet. I'm not willing to clean it up. I'm not willing maybe to meet you at that point in my finances yet. Do you think there's some part of that in some couples?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sure. There we go with the selfish part in it, you know. Then you shouldn't have gotten married, you know, because when you're married, you should be accountable to your spouse. You should be in partnership with your spouse. You know, so yeah.
When we were facing, or especially when I was single and deep at the apex of my debt, it was much easier to not open those letters than it was to face the situation. Like, if I didn't know what the balance was, then no big deal.
Couldn't
right?
hurt you.
Right, so it wasn't even like you were lying to a spouse or anything. You were almost lying to yourself.
Yeah, so because it's more comfortable. It's right. more comfortable. Oh, it's not that bad. I'm fine. I mean, everybody's got debt, you know, no big deal. But then when you actually crack that letter open, it hits you right in the face and things get really real at that point. But what happens is, just like that in marriage, if you don't deal with it, then it's no big deal. And so a lot of people just choose to not deal with it, take the head in the sand mentality and think that they could just la, 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 and everything could be all right. That doesn't work.
It's like being a toddler, you know, if you just cover your eyes, nobody could see you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, mind over matter. If I don't mind, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. You know, another thing from that same episode with Kevin Millard was he gave the thing where marriages are like you're in a boat and you're kind of drifting, you know, and you're drifting due to neglect or busyness and you're not really paying attention to things. And if we aren't paddling together the same way towards the common goals, you know, you could end up going over the waterfall, ending up in divorce or whatever the case may be. But, you know, you do have to put in that hard work paddling that boat so you don't end up going over the waterfall.
And the way he broke it down was a really key point about that drift is that it's slow, subtle, and you don't even recognize it. It's like if you're not putting the effort in to move forward, you're not standing still. You're drifting apart. You're drifting apart slowly but surely.
So if you don't mind me asking, Ty, when you guys first had that conversation where you were sort of laying all your cards on the table, did you feel, obviously you felt you were going to listen, be compassionate. Did you feel like you had to help educate your partner? Is that maybe too pedantic a word? I don't know. How did you go about sort of talking that out and maybe sort of revealing some of the things that you knew about money?
Sure. Well, I don't want it to sound all pretty and everything at first, but I was hurt. I was hurt at first, you know, because I felt like, here it is. This is the man that I'm about to walk down the aisle, to before God and everything. And I found myself being as transparent and he was holding back. So at first, after the initial hurt and everything, you know, wore off a little bit, I said, okay, we can do this, because you have to keep in mind, I saw Talent. He had a full-time job. He was in the military, but he was also delivering pizzas. I thought in my mind, you could have told me that Tyler had any debt because he wasn't married, didn't have any kids, was in the military, getting that check every single month, living expenses, everything. Right. So I thought he was just a hard hustler. I'm like, yeah, I'm about to marry somebody that's on a grind. You know what I mean?
Which he
like,
was. He's delivering pizzas.
Yeah. I had no idea that he was hustling to pay off his debt really quickly before we got married. So I had no idea. So once all the cards were laid out on the table, I was able to then sit back and say, wow, okay. Now I see why he was doing what he was doing. He's not lazy. Right. He didn't physically or verbally abuse me. He was a great man of God, great man to me. And it was like, okay, you know, we can do this. So, like I said, we did a lot of praying. But then we started to educate ourselves together. That's what was the fun part about it. When I saw that my spouse was willing, my spouse, soon-to-be spouse, was willing to change and willing to do whatever he had to do in order to free himself from this debt, I said, okay, we can do this. Let's do this together. So we would watch episodes of Susie Orman. We would, because she was big back then, you know, we would email each other. Like, I'll be at work, and I'll find an article on MSN or whatever, and I'll email it to him, be like, check this out. We would get books together from the library or whatever, and we would read them together. Like, we were excited about our future financially. So,
yeah, man, I think that's such a cool story. Yeah, I don't think it's no harm in saying that she did help educate me, because mm-hmm. again, this is something she went and studied in college. This is mm-hmm. something that she did for a living, and all I did was for a living was spend money. It yeah. seemed like, and so I needed some education. And but like she said, like she dug, she came in the trenches with me, and we grew together.
And I never once ever, we've almost been married 10 years, never once ever brought it back up. I never
threw it in his, of course.
Exactly. Except storytelling, you know, but I never threw it in his face. I never said, well, you did this or whatever. Even if we had a disagreement or argument, I never brought up his past financially. Because I know that that's not who he is as a person.
And here's another controversial approach that we took in 2015. At no point was it ever my debt after June 3rd, 2006. Yep. She never approached it, verbalized it, treated it as my debt. It was always our debt. We had our plan, and we worked together to yep. destroy and eliminate our debt to become debt free together.
One of the things too I notice about when you're talking about it, you both seem to be very humble. You know, Talat's like, he's like, I'm totally willing to learn. I'm going to do this. And Ty is very humble about, well, you know, she's not like lording it over him, you know, willing right. to get in there. So you both seem very humble together. And I really like that, because it means that you're both teachable and you're both willing to learn mm-hmm. moving forward. And I think that's really a great thing and probably very helpful in your marriage.
Oh, absolutely. And let me tell you, you know, I was the one with the better credit score then, paid off my car and cash and things like that. But I have learned so much from this man over the past almost 10 years financially. So, like, matter of fact, his credit score is a little bit better than mine now.
Go figure. Awesome.
You know? But, yes. You know, like, he inspires me to do better financially and, you know, to reach for the stars, you know? So, yeah, mm-hmm. we're both in it together.
I think that in marriage, man, it's usually two different people come together to complete each other. And so I bring something that Ty doesn't bring, and Ty brings something that I don't bring. And that's what marriage is. It's two imperfect people. Yeah. They're going to remain imperfect because there was only one perfect person who ever been here. But what you do is you're steady striving for perfection together, man. And that's the cool part about marriage. Yeah.
See, I mean, you know, what you're saying sounds really awesome. And I think in a lot of couples, that's almost unique. You know, that you're both coming to this with this sort of equal, we're both part of the same team and we're going to make this better, which I mean, it's certainly refreshing. I think a lot of couples don't always come to that, even in this day and age.
Yep, that's a fact.
They don't. And that's why our message to a lot of couples, we try to, you know, educate them, you know, and tell them that you got to come together as one, you know, like this is somebody that, I mean, I said, I want to marry, mm-hmm. you know, so.
You're both part of each other's story now.
That's right. He's good enough to be the father of my children, you know? So, hey.
You know what? I mean, with personal finance, number one, it is personal, and that's where the emotional part comes in. But if you can't get your mind right, there's no strategy. I don't care how many episodes of the Money Mastermind show you watch. If your mind's not right, it's not going to work. And yeah. so if you got messed up thinking, if you have messed up behavior, it's nothing that we got all these personal finance people on one show and they won't be able to help you not one iota until you get your mind right. And so that's why we take that approach that we are still. Well, I mean, we've been debt free for 9 years now and we're still willing to learn. We're still willing to tune in to other people's material to try and find something that maybe we can do better. Yeah. And that's the approach that you got to take. You got to always be willing to learn. You're never there.
There's always an improvement. Right.
And coming in, you know, in our culture these days, a lot of people come into marriage thinking, you know, I'm going to get married and this is going to fulfill me. It's going to make me whole or whatever. And they don't go into it with the idea that they're going in almost with a servant's heart, you know, to serve this other person, to love them and to always look out for their best, you know. And that, to me, I think that really is part of the problem. People go in with the wrong mindset, thinking that marriage is going to make them happy or it's going to fulfill them in some way. Do you think that's part of it as well? I'm sorry.
And then that's where that big wedding comes in, right, Peter? It's like, yeah, this is going to be fun for me, and we're going to have this huge celebration, and then we'll each keep our own bank accounts. Not that that can never work, but it just seems like, to me, a bit of a weird mentality toward building a life together, personally.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, when we teach or speak, we like to bring up that there's a big difference between a covenant relationship and a contractual relationship. And unfortunately, way too many marriages are acting and operating as if they are business partners contractually instead of covenantal life partners. And so it brings a different connotation if you look at, if you are approaching your marriage as if you're in a covenant, like Peter said, you're coming into it with a servant's heart from both directions. Whereas if you're coming into it looking at it as a contract, you're looking at, well, I got mine, you got yours. And, you know, can you imagine, like, we know couples that have sat at the table, they're out at a restaurant eating dinner, and they're trying to figure out who's going to pay for dinner. Like, how is that a conversation that you have with your spouse? Like, who's paying for dinner? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
Does that sound like a marriage or a business partnership? Are y'all roommates? Or y'all married?
My wife and I will often joke because we share the same credit card account. Like, it's just two cards. So we'll joke, who's paying for dinner tonight? Because
dinner's on me tonight, babe.
So, and that's kind of interesting because, like, a lot of fewer and fewer credit card issuers are even allowing joint accounts anymore.
Really?
Yeah, you have to ask for them. It's not like an automatic thing anymore. And some of them won't even do it, even if you ask.
Wow.
So that's something, it's kind of interesting.
That's sad.
You can see why, though. You can see why they might do that, right? If they're trying to assess risk. And unfortunately, there's a great reason why we have this episode, because there's a whole lot of relationships out there that aren't working cooperatively like this. So you can see how...
Yeah.
That tug of war could result in putting your own finances in a bind and then the credit card company in a bind after.
Yeah.
Well, I can say, to a certain degree, as far as the credit cards are concerned, I can see why having them separate would be kind of nice, just from this standpoint of, I mean, that was the hardest thing for us to do when we finally got divorced was that joint credit card, the one joint credit card account. That was harder to manage than our joint bank account. The joint bank account, all we had to do was sign something, and now it's just my bank account. But with the credit card account, it was a pain in the butt to get that closed and get that taken. It was harder than I thought it should have been.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's interesting how you talked about it, like contracts and stuff like that. I mean, like, historically, marriages, they weren't always romantic. Right, they were arranged. I'll trade this for land. I'll do this for that. You know, they were somewhat contractual, and I think that there's maybe even some cultural aspects of that even today. Do you think some of the money problems in couples are this locked into maybe these quote unquote traditional roles? Like, one spouse should be doing this, the other one should be doing that. Like, one shouldn't be involved with the money, the other one should. And that a lot of couples maybe are still in that mindset.
I don't know if that's more prevalent than, I think a bigger issue and a more common theme I get is two people who don't want to relinquish their independence. Mm. And so they want to both feel as though they're standing on their own too. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's not so much of the woman should be home in the kitchen and cooking and cleaning, whereas I got mine, you got yours. I'll take care of the mortgage, you take care of the utilities. I'll take care of the cars, you take care of the childcare. And we got our own money. It's more of a lack of wanting to be codependent, and what they want is to have some semblance, or at least in their mind, they want to feel as though they're still their own person. They don't want to, quote unquote, get lost or, quote unquote, lose themselves in marriage. And that lead when that there's just no room for that stance of independence in a healthy marriage, because it's going to lead to something worse.
It sounds like you've got one foot in, one foot out. You're not sure.
You already got an opt-out clause.
Mm-hmm. And it comes back to that trust issue that you were talking about earlier. You know, if mm-hmm. you're not transparent, you're not communicating, and you're trying to keep one foot here and one foot there, that trust really isn't going to be building either.
Right. In that situation.
So here's a question for you. How do you guys actually structure the finances at your house? I mean, do you have monthly budget meetings? Do you sit down and talk about your financial goals together? You know, just how is all that structured for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. We do that every single month. We sit down, we do our budget together. Now, I'm the one that's home majority of the time. So I'm the one that actually like inputs it into our budget software, but we both have a budget meeting. So there's no money that's spent or allocated to a certain line, category, item without the both of us being involved.
Yeah, and we do goals on a regular basis mm-hmm. too. We think that that's foundational. Again, that goes back to building that proper foundation. One of the first things you should be doing as husband and wife is dreaming together.
Yep.
It's coming up with like this plan, this vision for your life, this destination that you're trying to get to. And so, I mean, every single year we start the year off by saying what type of goals we have individually, collectively, and we sit down, we write it down, and we go back and check in on it and see where we stand. It's fun. Like you're dreaming together, you're mm-hmm. planning, you're living life, you're doing life together. I mean, so financial goals is and goals in general, not just financial, but life goals. You know what I mean? And we do our budget every single month before the month begins. Tied, you know, like she said, she lines it up. But then we sit and we have discussions about it. We go back and forth, and then we both come up with the final conclusion as to what the budget for the month will be.
Sounds like that's a great way to actually just incorporate the coupleness of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you have those goals, now you have these two things that this, you know, you're these two separate people, but now you're both going to share in this one thing that you're striving for.
It forces you to communicate about your finances. Mm-hmm. And if you can communicate about your finances, you can communicate about anything in your marriage.
True.
And that's an unfortunate thing too, right? I think too often money and finances are thought of this this other thing that's separate from everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can do everything else, but then this thing is over there mm-hmm. without the realization that really it's tied into everything we do anyway.
Foundational. It's a foundational issue. Peter, correct me if I'm wrong. Number one topic talked about in the Bible? Mm-hmm. Finances?
Yeah.
That must have been pretty important.
So one of the things that I think you guys talk about, how you have different spending and saving styles and different kind of money priorities. But when it comes to like the big things, like your big goals in life, I assume you guys are on the same page. So even though you might have different like immediate priorities or different ways of getting there, I assume that moving forward and like looking at the big picture things, like what you want your retirement to look like and that sort of thing, I assume you guys are on the same page. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a topic that we put out. We revisit that. Like we've, you know, recently come across all these financial independence people. So, you know, that's the conversation we're having. Like, hey, they our age and they going across the world and they retired. How did they do that? And so again, that's just, you know, again, having fun and dreaming together, you know? So we think about things like that. We talk about, you know what? When we get that big break, we're going to get this house and it's going to have this feature in it. You know, we're going to have this and that. And it's fun to just dream together and come up with these goals together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's key because I mean, one of the things that I realized looking back on stuff is that even though my ex and I had always been like, yeah, it's important to save for retirement, we never talked about what each of us wanted that retirement to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so, I'm sorry. So we had completely different ideas of like what we want life to be, what our, you know, what everything. So looking back, you know, there are days when I'm just like going, how did we even last as long as we did? because some of that stuff was just not, when we started talking about, started really thinking about it, it just really wasn't meshing.
Mm. I think retirement's a tough talk because it's in your mind so far away. So you don't take it as serious.
Mm-hmm.
as opposed to like if you're saving, if you know you want to move in the next 5 years, you're gonna be more concrete and you're gonna be more defined in your conversation. But if you're talking about 30 years from now, you know, like you're like, yeah, you know, I would love to retire in Florida. That'd be nice and play golf. But you're not really like you haven't identified your retirement number. You know, like you don't know. Then you don't backwards plan to figure out how much you need to be putting away at what interest rate to get to that retirement number because it's so far off. And so you have to treat it like an immediate, although it's a long range financial goal, you have to put the same amount of detail and preparation into it because guess what? Retirement is going to happen. It's going to happen.
And how you want it to look is going to really be dependent on what you put into it.
I'm not trying to pass out stickers and say, welcome to Walmart at 65. So you got to do something about that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. If you are watching right now and you are a checker at Walmart, it's all good. Seriously. It's all good. That's just not what I want to do.
But there's a lot of people that they don't have that choice one way or the other.
Right.
That's the point. If you choose to do that for, you know, any number of reasons, great. Yeah. You want the social
do it,
outlet.
They
want
to stay active and whatnot. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to be on the beach.
That's the point of financial independence. You have the independence to make that choice. And if one of you wants to keep working.
Choice.
My wife, it sounds crazy because we're so young. I would be willing to bet, well, my stock market account isn't as large as some of the people on the show probably, but I would bet my entire balance that my wife will want to work to 65. She loves every day of teaching young children. I would be willing to bet that there's nothing that could tear away from that. On her weekend, she wants to do it. That's so, awesome. It's crazy to me, but I love it. I'm glad that she loves it that much. So it might look different. Financial independence might look different for each of us, and we have that conversation all the time about sort of what goals within that each of us might pursue, but it doesn't have to be one exact template for each couple that will work for everyone.
The point is that you all talk about it and you all plan a vision and set a destination that you all want to get to and then go for it.
One thing Kyle was kind of getting there was it's not really our retirement. it can, like, you obviously have to talk about it as couples, but when it comes to retirement, you have to remember that it really is still your retirement because not only could your spouse die or you could get divorced, but very rarely do couples actually retire on the same date. So you really are, there's a little thing there where even though you have to talk about it as a couple and head towards that goal, there is sort of a bit of my retirement in that too.
Mm-hmm. 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 Agreed.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess if one spouse retires before the other one, it could be a matter of years, right? Especially if it's an age difference. You're not going to be running off to the Bahamas while the other person's still working the 9-to-5.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
and it's crazy. A few people talk about that, Glenn. Like, it's unbelievable to me. And then all of a sudden when it gets brought up, there's like all this weird jealousy. I don't know. I've just noticed this a lot lately amongst parents and my students at school. And it's weird, man. It's like, how did you not talk about this till you were both 55 or 65 and 55? I don't understand that.
And that's got to be kind of an awkward thing too, you know, knowing that you got to wake up for the grind because somebody happens to be maybe a little older than you or younger than you or whatever. And, you know, they get to kind of have a little more freedom than you.
Get a sleep in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, not that, you know, everybody didn't pay their dues, but, you know, yeah. Why make that the awkward conversation when it happens? You know, talk about how you want it to be before then. And it's interesting, Miranda, you were talking about how, like, there were these different things you didn't know about financially necessarily. And it seems like if you have those conversations and you include the money part of it, like, what do we want this to look like? What do we want us to be? Are we on the same page? You really do find out what you have in common with your other person. You know, like, you sort of maybe on a superficial level you have it, but there might be other deeper things that maybe aren't in common that you thought were.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, I mean, part of it too is, you know, I love to travel. I like to go do different things. But my ex never really cared for traveling much. And it was something that we didn't really think about. But when things were going down and he was asking for the divorce, I started thinking about it more and, you know, with the help of therapy. And just realizing that looking back, I'm like, yeah, so we had this thing. We know he didn't want to travel. We know I wanted to travel. And what would our retirement years even look like at that point? Because we had such widely different ideas of what we wanted to do with our lives. And when I sat down and started thinking about it and looking back on it, I was like, this was a big glaring hole that maybe we should have addressed, like, I don't know, 10 years ago. So,
you know, really, I wonder if that's something that needs to be addressed too when you're first getting together, is finding out ways that you are different. Because, you know, when you're getting married, you're thinking about all the ways that we're alike, and we love each other, and we have our faith in common, we have this in common. Maybe you need to talk a little bit about the things you don't have in common that may arise to be an issue later on. You know, maybe one spouse wants to travel a lot and the other doesn't, you know, or one is more of a spender and one's a saver, you know.
And we are all, like you're saying, we are these selfish creatures, right? So what are we willing to actually give up? You know, there's always going to be that limit. We always say we're going to do whatever, but you know, if that's that thing that you're not willing to give up, you know, how does that fit into the relationship necessarily? You know, where is that going to stop you, or, you know, how are you really going to combine things then if that's your stopping point there on something?
Yeah, for sure. And I just think just having those big life goals in common, it's not just like travel, but it's also like things like, how many kids do you want? What happens? I mean, I had a friend who was like, you know, I want, like, we never had that issue because we were both like, one is good. But but I know I have friends who are like one of them, you know, wants like maybe two kids, and the other one is like, oh, I came from a big family, I want five or six kids. And it's like, that's a big thing. You know, that's a big sticking point that you run into. These are big emotional issues that people get hung up on. And if you know, and it's not just about money, it's about, well, kids too. That's money. Kids are money. But
or part kids of the money are lack of money.
That's right. Yeah. Lack of money. I mean, but that's still a big conversation you need to have, and it does affect your finances and affects your life goals and everything else. So I think having those conversations and making sure that you have all the same kind of big life goals. You don't have to be exactly the same. I mean, like you guys were saying earlier. I mean, part of the fun of getting married or finding that person is that person that's a little bit different from you and brings those different strengths and has those different perspectives. But at the same time, it's like on these big major issues, it kind of helps if you guys are on the same page.
Yeah, I think it's huge that, I mean, marriage, again, you are different, and that's great. That's okay. Like, embrace that. Like, embrace the imperfections. Understand that. That's why you're with that person, is to help make them better. And they're with you to help make, you know, you better. But like you said, when you lay out a roadmap or at least a final destination that you both would like to get to, now you can backwards plan on the steps and the paths and the avenues that it will take to get to that final destination. If you do that together, if you go through that those steps together, you know, naturally you're going to be on the same page. And even if you stray a little bit, you have a common vision to look back on to help recalibrate and get you back on the right path.
You know, it's interesting, Talat. You know, you talked about how you weren't so money savvy maybe when you guys met, but you certainly sound like somebody who's on point now.
And he is. I'm telling you.
So, I mean, that
is so, almost 10 years. I should have learned something by now.
It's pretty inspiring to probably a lot of people. And just that,
it is.
You really can get your head around what your finances are and really take control of them.
Absolutely.
And I guess when you have a good partner, it helps too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what I'd like to do is, you know, we'll go around and let's just get our final word on dealing with our spouses and financial priorities. Tom, what's your final word?
Beyond just couples, money is such a taboo topic. People need to not be afraid to talk about money. So certainly talk with your spouse or your girlfriend, boyfriend at the time, and know what each other's about. Don't leave it taboo just because that's what you sort of learned from your parents and everything else. You just have to talk about money.
Peter, your final word?
My final word is just to, when you're going into marriage or something along those lines, make sure you're going in together as a team, that you're trying to create unity and that you're working towards goals that you have together, you know. And when you need to, make sure that you're compromising with each other. Maybe you have to give up something that you kind of wanted to do in order so that your spouse can do something that they want to do. So work together, distribute the responsibilities in your finances, and make sure you're talking about them and communicating.
Miranda, your final word?
Just going back to make sure you're headed in the same direction and you have the same big goals in life, so that you can work on these things together. Going back to, you just really do need to have those discussions and figure out, you know, what does, you know, sure, yes, we want to use this money for this stuff, but what do we want our life to look like? And do we want our life to look like the same thing?
And Kyle, what is your final word?
I just thought, as someone young in their marriage, this was a great episode. I love the humble quality you can tell was like a secret ingredient, or maybe a not so secret ingredient, that made this all work together. And I'm going to blatantly steal or borrow the phrase dream together. I just think that's way more inspiring than like budget together or keep track of expenses together. I like the idea of dream together. Put that carrot on the end of the stick for both of you.
And Ty and Talat, what's your final word on financial priorities in a marriage?
Just know that people can change. Your spouse can change. Just because they may have had bad money mistakes or a financial situation does not mean that they can't turn around from that situation.
And remember that you want to mix marriage and money in a crock pot, not a microwave. It takes time.
I like that. I like that.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
So for viewers out there that may not be familiar with His and Her Money, can you tell them a little bit about your site and what you guys do online?
Yeah, we're America's number one money couple, and we teach people how to manage their money, their marriage, and everything in between. We have a podcast called The His and Her Money Show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/His and Her Money. We have almost 11,000 subscribers over there. We have over 150 videos over there, just full of practical advice to help people get on the right path financially. Our podcast is dedicated to personal finance advice, and it has tons of debt-free stories to help people be inspired to know that debt freedom is a real thing, is happening to real people, and that they can be next. And we can be found at hisandhermoney.com.
If your podcast and your site is any bit as informative and as fun as this episode has been, I'm sure people out there will get a lot of information from it and they'll enjoy it. So head on over there. Thank you again for joining us and sharing your expertise with us. And until next week, be good with your money. Good night.
Thanks for joining us on the Money Mastermind Show. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube, and follow us on Google+.